Good morning, everyone. Welcome to church this morning. My name is Jennifer Lewis. I've been a member of the church here for about 4 years now. I serve as an RE teacher. In the pulpit this morning, we have Sayer Johnson. Sayer Johnson will be speaking about storytelling. This is a sermon about the resonance of our stories and the power of visibility. All of the music and readings today are expressions of storytelling. We will have no hymnal music today, so sit back and enjoy this journey. Everyone is invited to stay following the worship service for fellowship, conversations, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, through these doors behind me. This is also the first Sunday of the month, so it is potluck Sunday. So that'll be at 11:15, and even if you didn't bring anything, please stay and join us for lunch. If you're a newcomer here this morning, we extend to you a special welcome and hope that if this is your first time to visit, you'll consider putting your name on one of those little cards in the back of your hymnal, giving that to an usher, or leaving it in the offering plate. If you do that, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months so you know what's going on here at church. If you have children with you today, they may certainly stay with you in the service today. But we do have a professionally staffed nursery if you'd like to leave them there too for infants and young children. In September, our RE classes will begin again for children from pre-K through middle school. If you want to learn more about the church and Unitarian Universalism, there are information displays on this wall behind me in the Kate Worker Room, and you can get pamphlets and newsletters and other visitor information that you can take with you. And now, I invite you to turn and greet your neighbors, especially those you don't know yet.
It's so lively.
I know. Okay. If you have an announcement, a short announcement for the good of the church, please feel free to come to the microphone.
Good morning. I should sit closer. I'm always up here. Sarah Lazars, if you have not yet filled out the poll that was sent out a few weeks ago, you still have time. I know we said end of July, but Mary Johnson's not back yet, so you can still fill it out. paper copies of the poll are over here on the music stand. They're yellow. There's a basket on one of the desks in the worker room. You can fold it up and put it in there. You can do it on the link that was sent out. If you need that link again, just let me know and I'll send it to you. It's all anonymous. Only certain people are going to read them, but we don't know who is saying what, so say whatever you want. We've gotten quite a few responses, but I don't think everybody has responded yet. It's stuff that we want our interim minister to know, kind of direction for worship and things like that. So if you could please take some time and fill that out, we'd really appreciate it.
I now invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. Note that there will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a moment.
Sometimes this is called milestones and joys. I'm not going to mention the milestone, but today is my birthday.
We were lucky enough to have my husband's brother, Sam, with us for this past week, and it's been a great joy for our whole house.
I now invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning. May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared become a load lightened. The prelude begins our worship service as Lyric Johnson lights our chalice. Let us worship together.
Birds singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you're only waiting for this moment to arrive. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, into the light of a dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you're only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Thank you.
Please join in responsive reading number 442, found in the back of the gray hymnal. It's entitled, We Bid You Welcome, and is from Richard S. Gilbert. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit seeking rest. We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart. We bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith. We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. We have received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. This morning's offering will now be given and received. We receive with gratitude all generous gifts of time, talent, and treasure, and together we bless them and those who gave in faith, hope, and love. Amen.
Could all the children come down? Since today is about storytelling, I'm reading a poem by Shel Silverstein called If the World Was Crazy. If the world was crazy, you know what I'd eat? A big slice of soup and a whole quart of meat. A lemonade sandwich, and then I might try some roasted ice cream or a bicycle pie. A nice notebook salad, an underwear roast, an omelet of hats, and some crisp cardboard toast. A thick malted milk made from pencils and daisies, and that's what I'd eat if the world was crazy.
If the world was crazy, you know what I'd wear? A chocolate suit and a tie of Eclair, some marshmallow earmuffs, some licorice shoes, and I'd read a paper of peppermint news. I talk through my ears, and I always would carry a paper umbrella for when it grew hazy, to keep in the rain if the world was crazy.
If the world was crazy, you know what I'd do? I'd walk on the ocean, and I'd swim in my shoe. I'd fly through the ground, and I'd skip through the air. I'd run down the bathtub and bathe on the stair. When I met somebody, I'd say, goodbye, Joe. And when I was leaving, they'd say, hello. And the greatest of men would be silly and lazy, so I would be king if the world was crazy. Thank you.
Well, Sarah asked me to read a story to you today for everyone. This was one that really was, I used in my teaching, and I found it very meaningful, and I think of it often nowadays when I see certain things. This was written by Bird Baylor, who's an American author of picture books for children. Four of her books have been given the Caldecott Award. She lives in the Southwest, in Arizona, in an adobe house that doesn't have any electricity. Her work presents images of the Southwest and an intense connection between the land and the native people. Her prose illustrates vividly the value of simplicity, the natural world, and the balance of life within. The story I'm going to read today is written in free verse, and it's called I'm in Charge of Celebrations. Sometimes people ask me, aren't you lonely out there with just desert around you? I guess they mean the bear grass and the yuccas and the cactus and the rocks. I guess they mean the deep ravines, the hawk's nest and the cliffs, and the coyote trails that wind across the hills. Lonely? I can't help but laughing when they ask me that. I always look at them surprised, and I say, how could I be lonely? I'm the one in charge of celebrations. Sometimes they don't believe me, but it's true, I am. I put myself in charge. I choose my own. Last year, I gave myself 108 celebrations, besides the ones that they closed school for. I can't get by with only just a few. Friend, I'll tell you how it works. I keep a notebook, and I write the date, and then I write about the celebration. I'm very choosy over what goes in that book. It has to be something I plan to remember the rest of my life. You can tell what's worth a celebration because your heart will pound, and you'll feel like you're standing on top of a mountain, and you'll catch your breath like you were breathing some new kind of air. Otherwise, I would just count it an average day. I told you I was choosy. Friend, I wish you had been there on Dust Devil Day. But since you weren't, I'll tell you how it got to be my first real celebration. You call them whirlwinds, if you want to. Me, I think Dust Devils has a better sound. Well, anyway, I always stop to watch them. Here, everyone does. You know how they come from far away, moving up the flats, swirling and swaying and falling and turning, picking up sticks and sand and feathers and dry tumbleweeds? Well, last March 11th, we were all going somewhere. I was in the back of the pickup truck when the Dust Devils started together. You could see that they were giants. You'd swear they were calling their friends to come too. They came dancing in time to their own windy music. We all started counting. We all started looking for more. They stopped the truck and we turned around and around, watching them all. There were seven. At a time like that, something kind of crazy in you happens. You have to run to meet them, yelling all the way. You have to whirl around like you were one of them. And you can't stop until you're falling down. And then all day you think how lucky you were to be there. Some of my best celebrations are sudden surprises like that. If you weren't outside at that exact moment, you would miss them. I spend a lot of time outside myself looking around. Once I saw a triple rainbow that ended in a canyon where I'd been the day before. I was halfway up the hill standing in a drizzle of rain. It was almost dark, but I wouldn't go in because of the rainbows, of course. And there, on top of the hill, a jackrabbit was standing up on his hind legs, perfectly still, looking straight at that same triple rainbow. I may be the only person in the world who has seen a rabbit standing in the mist, quietly watching rainbows. That's worth a celebration anytime. I wrote it down, and I drew the hill and the rabbit and the rainbow and me. Now, August 9th is always Rainbow Celebration Day. And I was lucky on Coyote Day because out of all time, it had to be one moment only that certain coyote and I would meet, and we did. Friend, you should have been there too. I was following deer tracks, taking my time, bending down as I walked, kind of humming. I hum a lot when I'm alone. I looked up in time to see a young coyote trotting through the brush. She crossed in front of me. It was a windy day, and she was going east. In that easy, silent way coyotes move, she pushed into the wind. I stood there, hardly breathing, wishing I could move that way. I was surprised to see her stop and turn and look back at me. She seemed to think that I was just another creature following another rocky trail. And that's true, of course, I was. She didn't hurry, she wasn't afraid. I saw her eyes and she saw mine. That look held us together. Because of that, I never will quite feel the same again. So on September 28th, I celebrate Coyote Day. Here's what I do. I walk the trail that I walked that day, and I hum softly as I go. Finally, I unwrap the feast that I have brought to her. Last time, it was 3 apples and some pumpkin seeds and an ear of corn and a big homemade ginger cookie. The next day, I happened to pass that way again. Coyote tracks went all around the rock where the food had been, and the food was gone. Next year, I'll make it even better. I'll bring an extra feast, and I'll eat there too. Another one of my greatest celebrations is called Time of Falling Stars. It lasts almost a week in the middle of August, and I wait all year for those hot summer nights when the sky goes wild. You could call them meteor showers if you want to. Me, I like to say that they're falling stars. All that week, I sleep outside. I give my full attention to the sky. And every time a streak of light goes shooting through the darkness, I feel my heart shoot out of me. One night, I saw a fireball that left a long, red, blazing trail across the sky. After it was gone, I stood there looking up, not quite believing what I'd seen. The strange thing was, I met a man who told me he had seen it too, while he was lying by a campfire 500 miles away. He said he didn't sleep again that night either. Suddenly, it seemed that two spoke a language that no one else could understand. Every August of my life, I think of that. Friend, I've saved my New Year's celebration until last. Mine's a little different from the one of most people. Mine comes in spring. To tell the truth, I never did feel like my New Year started January 1st. To me, that's just another winter day. I let my year begin when winter ends and morning light comes earlier, the way it should. That's when I feel like starting new. I wait until the white-winged doves are back from Mexico and the wildflowers cover the hills and my favorite cactus blooms. It always makes me think I ought to bloom myself. And that's when I start to plan my New Year's celebration. I finally choose a day that's exactly right. Even the air has to be perfect, and the dirt has to feel good and warm on my bare feet. Usually it's a Saturday around the end of April. I have a drum that I beat to signal the day. Then I go wandering off, following all of my favorite trails to all of the places that I like. I check how everything is doing. I spend the day admiring things. If the old desert tortoise I know from last year is out strolling around, I go his direction for a while. I celebrate with horned toads and ravens and lizards and quail. And friend, it's not a bad party. Walking back home, kind of humming sometimes, I think about those people who ask me if I'm lonely here. I have to laugh out loud. I hope you'll make your own days of celebration.
Hi, everyone. Hi, baby. Sarah asked me to choose a passage from a favorite book, and I have so many favorite books. So I chose the book that I'm reading now, The Night Circus. It's so good, I highly recommend it. And I chose this passage because my personal life and my professional life reiterates to me on a daily basis that everybody has their stuff. Everybody has a burden that they want to lay down. The pool of tears. The sign outside this tent is accompanied by a small box full of smooth black stones. The text instructs you to take one with you as you enter. Inside, the tent is dark, the ceiling covered with open black umbrellas, the curving handles hanging down like icicles. In the center of the room, there's a pool, a pond enclosed within a black stone wall that is surrounded by white gravel. The air carries the salty tinge of the ocean. You walk over to the edge to look inside. The gravel crunches beneath your feet. It is shallow, but it is glowing. A shimmering, shifting light cascades up through the surface of the water, a soft radiance enough to illuminate the pool and the stones that sit at the bottom. Hundreds of stones, each identical to the one you hold in your hand. The light beneath filters through the spaces between the stones. Reflections ripple all around the room, making it appear as though the entire tent is underwater. You sit on the wall, turning your black stone over and over in your fingers. The stillness of the tent becomes a quiet melancholy. Memories begin to creep forward from hidden corners of your mind, passing disappointments, lost chances, and lost causes. Heartbreaks and pain and desolate, horrible loneliness. Sorrows you thought long forgotten mingle with still fresh wounds. The stone feels heavier in your hand. When you drop it in the pool to join the rest of the stones, you feel lighter, as though you have released something more than a smooth, polished piece of rock. Now I would like to lead us into prayer and meditation with a reading by Mary Oliver called The Journey. And this is special to me, and especially around my relationship with Sayre when he was embarking on his transition. We both had a lot to come to terms with, and I was reading Mary Oliver for, you know, just because Mary Oliver, and I came across The Journey, and it just summed up everything that was happening and the support that I felt for Sayre, and a way to let him know that I fully understood the gravity of the situation and that I was encouraging him to do what he needed to do. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. I invite everyone to pray in their own way.
Hello. So when I was thinking about the general theme of stories and seeing what songs I was drawn towards, this is one that kept coming up, that, like the last reading in a lot of ways, this is... It's not so much a story with a neat little beginning, middle, and end. It's someone's reaction. In this case, Neil Young, to the unfortunate demise of a certain singer in the mid-90s. But wait a second. Let me, which is right when I moved to Seattle. So, wait, I have to get in costume, just to, you know, get in the mood for a song here. Go, oh. How's that? It's a little angsty. We'll have some more positive songs later.
I was driving way too fast, couldn't stop though, so I let the moment last. I'm for rolling, I'm for tossing in my sleep. It's not guilt though, it's not the company I keep. People my age, they don't do the things I do. They go somewhere while I run away with you. I got my friends and I got my children too. I got her love and she's got my love too. I can't hear you, but I feel the things you say. I can't see you, but I know what's in my way. Now I'm floating, 'cause I'm not tied to the ground. Words I've spoken seem to leave a hollow sound. On the long plane, see the rider in the night, see the chieftain, see the braves in cool moonlight. Who will love them when they take another life? Who will hold them when they tremble from the knife? Voicemail numbers on an old computer screen. Rows of lovers parked forever in a dream. Screaming sirens echoing across the bay to the old boats from the city far away. Homeless heroes walk the streets of their own town. Rows of zeros on a field that's turning brown. They play baseball, they play football under lights, they play card games, and we watch them every night. Need distraction, need romance and candlelight, need random violence, need entertainment tonight. Need the evidence, want the testimonial, expert witnesses on the brutal crimes of love. I was too tired to see the news when I got home. Pulled the curtain, fell into bed alone. Started dreaming, saw the writer once again in the doorway where she stood and watched for him, watched for him. I'm not present, I'm the drug that makes you dream. I'm a narrow star, I'm a cutlass supreme. In the wrong lane, trying to turn against the flow. I'm the ocean, I'm the giant undertow. I'm the ocean. I'm the ocean, I'm the giant undertow. I'm the ocean. I'm the ocean.
Thanks for listening. It's a long song.
Thank you. Go have a seat. Go have a seat. Not by Persephone. Go sit by Mama. Go sit by Mama. Go sit by your mother. Get her to get away from her because she's too distracting. All right. Storytelling weaves in and out of our lives. Stories are all around us from our beginnings. Some in obvious and intentional ways, and others in subtle and internalized ways. Many of us are introduced to storytelling in the form of books. Some of us are read to from our beginnings, Our parents or our grandparents are significant caretakers. They take the time to seek out books that will support us, that will teach us, that will reflect their values to us. Some books illustrate our lives and show us community and ideas in pages and in pictures. Oftentimes these books are filled with words that are familiar and reinforce concepts. Moral concepts, values, and narratives. Storytelling comes in many forms. Maybe books weren't valued in your upbringing, and instead your family told tales around the dinner table or around the Christmas tree, Yule log, or menorah. Yarns were spun by grandpas and uncles and great grandmas or sisters, told the same way year after year with the same reactions and the same comments, reinforcing your values, reinforcing ideas, reflecting our stories back to us. Some of us may have relied on music for stories. Music tells stories and marks time. Music can document other people's tales and can often reflect and intertwine with our own. Music can uplift us or comfort us or keep our angry fires burning. Another common storytelling is in the form of movies and television or the media. Sometimes the media is just a supplement or enhancement to our already existing access to stories, and some of us are told stories by the media and it fills gaps in our narratives. Some of the gaps are left because adults around us fail us or are themselves too busy or consumed to share stories. So we rely on media as our main nourishment. Media can tell stories with moving pictures and movement and accurately and clearly reflect individuals back to us, our mirror images. Although in my personal life with media, I seldom see individuals that take the form of people that I love and admire and engage with, at least in any sort of empowering or positive light. So television and movies for me, and for some, so for some of us, there are libraries. Sometimes we fall into that world that libraries can provide. Our bodies are cradled between the shelves and our minds are cradled between the pages. For me, libraries were a safe haven of both my youth emotionally and socially. Reading had always been something I could do easily and I genuinely enjoyed. Before I had my driving license and the ability to seek out people like me in real life, libraries were my connection to community. Libraries were a safe access to stories that I could choose to engage in or not. I could choose to check out or quietly and secretly just read in the corner with my frequent visits. For many of us, libraries are filled with stories, stories that were free and that were ripe for the picking. But again, stories come in many forms and present in many ways. Perhaps the stories that resonated with you were the ones that we heard on the bus or in the lunchrooms or maybe in the locker rooms. Some of those stories could have been celebratory and empowering or degrading and harmful. That's the thing about stories, is they hold so much power. Stories are all around us and from a very early age. The power that stories possess is deep. They have the power to help us feel connected and strong and worthy. Stories can hold up mirrors reflecting beauty and worth. They can be rearview mirrors where we have been and where we might where we come from. But the thing is with stories is they can also break us down. When we are constantly bombarded with stories that we do not see ourselves reflected in or identified in, it can be hurtful, it can be lonesome, and it can be disempowering. We can hear hurtful tales about folks like us that leave us feeling less than or wounded. Or we can search for stories that we can relate to only to find none. We do not see ourselves reflected back in narratives and stories over and over again. I believe that this can be very isolating. When I was a child, I had many stories around me. My mother read to me books aplenty, and my mama with glasses would read to me Jughead and Archie comics. We had lots of little golden books sprinkled all over the house, and we had lots of Bible stories. The nuns always had a story to tell me about naughty children and God's will, and the priest would drone on and on with unrelatable sermons that I knew in my little Catholic heart were so very important, yet so torturous to sit through. Music was also a storyteller in my life. My parents listened to country music, and many of those songs were 3-minute stories. 3 minutes of life or love or loss, stories sprinkled with yonder and darlin' and twangy backdrops. So music and books surrounded me and comforted me. Stories were always around me. There was also my father. My father was a storyteller. My childhood is punctuated by his stories. His stories of holidays past, the magic elements that they possessed. He could go into great detail of the colors and the sounds, and oftentimes he would humor us with one of these positive reflections. I would listen as a kid, raptured. His stories were also oftentimes embarrassing moments replayed over and over, each time a little more embarrassing or entertaining, depending on what character was involved. Oftentimes the funniest things to him, often the funniest parts were punctuated by his smoky laugh. When prodded by questions or bourbon, some of the stories of his personal strife would bubble up. He would replay parts of his challenging upbringing, tales of project housing and shining shoes in the French Quarter, Salvation Army Christmases, and eventually a hard life at a church farm work camp for boys where he lived until he was an adult. On occasion, some half-said dark glimpses and some stories of wartime horror would just slip out, unintentional and shocking, oftentimes punctuated by that awkward silence and then pretending that we didn't hear it, very much my family's way. So personal storytelling was modeled to me in a lot of different ways. When I was young and searching for folks like me, I read as much as I could. I read the stories of others. I read about Martina and Andy Warhol. I read as much as I could find about Liberace and Charles Nelson Reilly. I read all kinds of stories too. I was always interested in hearing people's stories, so I liked to read biographies. I read about Laura Ingalls and I got lost in her world. I read all about Judy Blume and I loved diving into each one of the characters. I read everything that Stephen King would dish out. War Days, War Horse, The Blue Man, Egon Afro all kept me company when real human companionship did not. I also watched a great deal of TV. From an early age, I liked documentaries and after-school specials, stories that dove deep into people's lives. 2020, Sunday Morning, those were also favorites. Hindsight, I knew what I was doing. I was looking for folks like me. I was seeking out reflection. Folks a little left of center, queer folks, artists, marginalized creative types. I was searching for community and other people's stories because I was unable to find community with people around me. My profound loneliness as a child made these 3-minute or 300-page or 1.5-hour escapes lifelines. Any glimpse of someone like me made me feel less alone. Any peek into a story that I could relate to was like nourishment. So when I began to emerge as a transgender person I now embrace, I continued my quest. My coming out was right on the cusp of what I like to call the gender revolution. There were a few books and a few stories, less than 10 I would count. Patrick Kalifia, Leslie Feinberg, they spoke to me. A few others were sprinkled in and around. In the media, I had Boys Don't Cry, and later on Transamerica, and a random Lisa Ling documentary or special. But I wanted more. I needed more. I needed stories, my insatiable appetite to listen and read and understand. So I started to tell my own story. I started to tell my story online, and I immediately found a community of people who had stories that I could easily weave into mine. It felt so satisfying to hear reflections and tales that resonated. It was satisfying for a moment, but for me, as in always, I needed real life. I had spent so much of my early life, and especially puberty, feeling very lonely and isolated, and I did not want that for myself anymore. So I created The Locker Room. We would gather on Friday nights and tell stories, fellas like me, men emerging. We would tell stories of our navigations from the bathrooms to the bedrooms, share and tell of other stories that we had heard that we would recommend to each other. It was this amazing once-a-month exchange of information and stories. As we grew closer, we went deeper, and it evolved and evolved again, all revolving around storytelling. So now I hear the stories and I see our stories. I know of more than 10 books. I know a few dozen. I know dozens of storytellers that share their narratives in engaging and entertaining ways. I know lots of folks who can bring me to my knees with laughter or heartbreak with their tales of living this transgender life. Stories like mine, stories that resonate with me and my journey now, stories that I can relate to and that are comforted by. I can relate the state of the transgender movement to how I emerged in the world as a lesbian. When I came out as a lesbian, there were more stories available. Ellen wasn't quite on the scene yet, but she would be soon. Martina was there, we had the Indigo Girls, Farron, Betty. I had a few old crones in my path who would sit a spell in my life and share their stories, the butch and femme dynamic in navigating women's rights and women's space, talking about navigating our plague and the liberation. The stuff that formed my identity as a lesbian, the lesbian oral history was there for me, and now I see the same emerging for my trans brothers and sisters. To me, storytelling is what's going to propel our movement forward. Sharing our narratives and giving ourselves by allowing honest peeks into how we navigate and who we are, I think this is the foundation of the trans movement. We have our own soundtrack with some awesome trans singers and songwriters. Our books are growing, and online storytelling is fierce and engaging. Our stories are now just a Google away. When MTUG does trainings, we do a Trans 101. We share the language, the do's and the don'ts. We express the medical issues and the choices that some of us have. But I would argue that one of the most important things that we do is we share our stories. We open up vulnerably and we share our tales. We give the gift of our stories as they resonate with folks. Our stories are not all the same. Our movement is mighty and diverse. But one thing we have in common is the way that gender has played or plays a key part in our evolution and identity. This is where the revolution began and ends for me, sharing stories, opening up conversation. It's the place that I believe that all bridges can be built. Living in this smallest Midwestern town, I knew I was not going anywhere, and I felt like I had two choices. I could transition quietly at home, stay at home as much as possible, and emerge like Heimlich, a big, beautiful butterfly. Or I could choose to share my process, but for me, really, it wasn't much of a choice. When I came out as a lesbian, I met lesbians almost immediately. They were connected. It seemed like one lesbian generally had a few of her exes around, and then there were friends, and so on and so forth. So many stories and lots of narratives. But when I came out as trans, it was like a scene in a movie. I walked down on the street to proclaim who I am, and all I could see were tumbleweeds. I looked around for trans folks for about 6 years before I finally met my first transgender. And that meeting and hearing his story has changed the course of my life. His willingness to be vulnerable and share with me his story changed my life. His story gave me life. So to me, I know I need to be out loud, not to live a life, not to give life, but to be a beacon, what they call a possibility model. I've been surrounded by so much love and support in my transition, I knew it was my obligation to give it back. A possibility model. Sharing my story, testifying, letting folks know that you can live your life authentically, you can claim your space. I like sharing my stories. It makes me feel connected and in some ways less lonesome because I feel like sharing my story is reaching out, letting folks know that I'm here and that I want to engage and I want to share. And I'm always going to be here. If you tell me your story, I'll tell you mine.
Tells a specific story about, the song is called The Digger's Song, and the other name for it is The World Turned Upside Down, and it's about the diggers movement in what's now the UK, in the mid-1600s. This was
This was an effort to live communally and have common lands that were shared together, where everyone worked it out for growing their food and grazing their cattle, and the nobility came down on them in a pretty bad way, as often happens, but I'm going to share the story, and I switch these last two verses. And I'm going to get really close to my face because my vision is not as good as it used to be. In 1649, St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the wasteland grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No one has any right to buy or sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder, they took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command. They make the laws now to chain us well. Their clergy dazzles us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed who feeds the rich while poor folks starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow unto the masters or pay rent unto the lords. We are free people, though we are poor. You diggers all stand up for justice, stand up now. You poor take courage, you rich take care. This earth was made a common treasury for everyone to share. All things in common, all people one. We come in peace, the orders came to cut them down. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent their hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tore down their cottages, destroyed their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on.
So I'm not as prepared as I should be for like the benediction. So I think I'll just say that storytelling is so valuable, and to share your stories and to listen to each other's stories. And so that's what I would leave you all with. And I'm also going to say that I'm looking forward to hearing whatever our new reverend's going to do as their fancy blessing at the end. So we'll see how that all goes. It's the last song. It's called Ripple.
You've probably heard it before.
You've probably heard it before, right?
Cleaver liked to play it. Sing along if you know the words. Ripple. Oh, yeah, the capo. And the words next to my face. Okay. Did sing with the voice of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp unstrung. Would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it close if it your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps it's better left unsaid. And I don't know, don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air, rippling still water, where there is no pebble tossed, no wind to blow. Reach out your hand if your cup be empty, if your cup is full, may it be again. Let it be known there is a fountain that was not made by the hands of man. Rippling still water, there is no pebble tossed, no wind to blow. You who choose to lead must follow. But if you fall, you fall alone. If you stand, then who's to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home. Rippling still water, where there is no pebble tossed, nor wind to blow.
It doesn't end on the chorus, does it?
No. I'm gonna do that.
Just a few mistakes.